Hello and welcome to the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michaela, and today I have the pleasure to talk to Martin Gratzer. Martin is the founder of a company called TopMind. TopMind is a dev shop that specializes in iOS development. Martin already started his company during the time he got his bachelor degrees in computer science. He grew the company from a one-person show to a small team of several developers. Well, I have plenty of questions for him about his entrepreneurial journey and the lessons learned along this way. But before I welcome Martin, let me briefly tell you about something I'm super excited about. So in 2018, I started to help companies outside of Microsoft to improve their code review practices. And by the end of last year, I finally took the leap to go full-time working with companies around the world on accelerating their code review practices. Right now, I have several new live workshops coming up. In those workshops that happen in small groups and are interactive and hands-on, I teach you how to speed up your code review process, how to increase the feedback value, and how to improve collaboration and communication during code reviews. If that sounds exciting to you, head over to michaelagreiler.com/workshops and have a look at the upcoming training sessions. I hope to see you in one of my classes. Well, but now back to Martin. Martin, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you, Michaela, for having me. It's nice to be here.
Well, Martin, we both actually went to the same university and have been very close for a few years. I remember you, well, at the age of probably 23, 24, and the only thing you really were super focused on was this dream of running your own company. While others were trying to land a job at Google or Siemens or any other large corporation, you wanted to start your own thing. Why was this so important to you, and what does it mean to run your own company?
That's right. I started the company quite early. There were several reasons for that. Before going to university, I had a corporate job at the big corporation here in Austria, in Carinthia. And I was in the IT department, and I also did some software development there. And after 1.5 years in this company, I somehow realized that this is not what I want. Yeah. This big company and this big corporate international structure, it somehow was too much for me. Decisions were made very slow, and you had no impact. Yeah. You have to imagine 20-year-old, young, full of energy, want to change the world more or less. And then you hit the wall in this big corporation. Yeah. So you're a small employee and you have the feeling that you cannot make any change, and you have the feeling that you cannot improve anything. Yeah. And I think this was the moment when I made the decision to go to university. So this was the first decision. And after that, I actually had to start my own company because I needed funding for studying at the university. And yeah, so this worked out quite nicely. And I started my freelance business like a lot of freelancers started. So they take the previous company they work for and use them as the first client. So the initial startup was somehow easier for me back then. And so I worked for the same company remote or as a freelancer. And then I started or did my studies at university.
Yeah, I remember that time actually, and I think it gave some stability and some, you know, just some ease of mind, because that company, well, at least you knew that probably a little bit of money would come in every month from some of the projects that you pitched there. But how did you then acquire other customers? How did you go out and find others that you could, you know, freelance for and that you could do some development work there? And I think I remember that you weren't completely focused only on development. You also did some advertisement or, you know, some graphics or something like that. So you also had quite a variety of services that you offered back then.
Yeah, that's right. So back then, the main focus was actually the web. And web programming back then was also called web design. Yeah, so it was a little bit different than today. So not as complex as today. And yeah, back then we had to do websites, and to do websites, you had to do the graphical representations as well. So we did a lot with Photoshop, designing the websites, and then also programming them and bringing them into the web. And I don't really remember how we found customers back then, but it somehow always worked out. Yeah? So there were a lot of local and small customers, and everyone needed a website back then. So this was early 2000. So there were no services like, I don't know, WordPress.com or something else where you could easily create a website in 5 minutes. So you needed someone with the expertise to create a very simple website back then.
Yeah, I remember. Actually, I was part of your company back then. Yes. And we developed our custom CMS, right? Custom.
Still sites running on the CMS. I checked them regularly. Two sites are still running on this system.
Yeah, wonderful. So, Martin, can you explain me, because, quite some years are between the very, very early beginnings of that company and now. Can you explain to me what your company does right now at that moment? What's your focus?
The company grew a little bit. We have 4 fixed employees and a team of freelancers. So overall, it's 9 people working on several projects. We are, you can call it an agency, but I don't like the term so much. But we offer our expertise around mobile software development to our customers. So the focus switched around 2008 to mobile development, especially iOS development back then. Today we also offer Android as well. And we are specialized in native mobile apps. And I like to describe it like native mobile apps plus everything that's related to them. So we advise our customers also in how to build their business model, how to implement the subscription models, which is a very hot topic right now. But we also have expertise in the company to build a software as a service, like infrastructures, backends, APIs for mobile apps. So if you need a mobile app or a mobile use case, we are the company that can realize this.
Mm-hmm. But I also know that over the last probably few months or maybe the last year, you also started working on a software product. So you're in the process of bootstrapping a software product and going away a little bit from this agency model. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's true. We always had the dream to be more independent because this agency business always depends on you having a client, finding new clients. So there is always some uncertainty. It worked out good so far, so cannot complain. But we wanted to have some more independence, and we started working on. So the idea I got 2 years ago, and we started working on it 1.5 years ago, and we are now almost at something you could call version 1. So I hope we will finish working on the product within the next few months, where we actually took a requirement which we had for our customers and we tried to make a product out of it. And it's about this mobile and app related subscription business models. So our product makes it easy for you to implement this kind of business models in your mobile apps and SaaS applications.
Okay, I hear that quite often, that people from the freelance, from the agency work that they do, they find patterns and they see, well, the same request over and over again. And then based on these patterns, they are actually developing some, you know, software product that they can reuse and help really solve that pain point that apparently several companies have. So it seems that this is exactly what you're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we are doing. So we built this use case for big customers 2 times. And the use case is very similar. And there comes the idea to, well, hey, can we make a product out of this? Is someone willing to pay for it? Because when you see that this process takes about, I don't know, 6 months of work to implement it individually for the client, and you can build a tool which can do it in 1 or 2 weeks then. That's a business model, I'd say.
And so now that you are building that product, do you already work with customers, or do you already, you know, inquire some of the customers or try to, you know, test the market a little bit if people are willing to pay? Maybe you have already some early subscribers or early clients that are waiting for your better. I don't know what's the status of your product, but
yeah, actually we have customer from the beginning. who is interested in implementing this product for his app and his system. And right now we are in exactly this testing phase, or we are shortly before starting this testing phase. So this is a very complex matter, and we don't want to release a product which is untested. And there we have one customer who is willing to integrate it with us, learn from this experience so that we can get the product ready for the market, so to say.
And you said at the beginning, you said, well, with an agency, you always have to look for new customers and, you know, get new people in the pipeline. Isn't that somehow similar with the software product, except that you don't have to constantly provide hours for value, but you still have to find customers on an ongoing basis, right?
Yes, that's true. But the whole business model works differently, because if I have a customer, we have a customer and the project ends, we don't earn any money anymore. If you have a subscription-based product and you get your customers, it's easier to plan, and it's easier to identify how much money you will have in the future, because usually you have monthly or yearly subscriptions, and if your subscribers are here and they pay, you can plan with them, and it's more sustainable because by acquiring more customers, you don't necessarily have more costs, and so you can grow into independence. I call it independence, because as soon as you have a stability with a product, you can start experimenting again. And that's not possible with client work, because the client wants it as cheap as possible, actually, and wants to have the thing he wants to have. And often there is not a lot of room for experiments, for new technologies. Even some customers don't allow us to write unit tests or do our software practices like we're used to. Often the truth. And yeah, then you have to make the decision if you do the project or not, if you can afford to not do the project. So that's the problem then, actually.
Okay, so you're getting a little bit more leeway to really, you know, do it your way. But I would like to learn a little bit more about your way. So you have now experience of over 15 years running that dev shop independently. What are some of the smart moves that you made in these 15 years that lead to your current success? What are some of the moves where you think, well, even though the times were hard, you know, we get through it? And
smart moves. It's a hard question, actually. I think one of the main success points was to specialize into one technology, especially when I was on my own. When the iPhone was released, I was very interested into these mobile technologies. And as with 2008, there was the release of the iPhone SDK. And back then I made the decision to leave this web development behind me and start to focus on this technology. And that's what I did back then. It was around 2008, 2009. I started learning this new technology, tried to get all the devices and all the knowledge. I had no idea about these technologies back then. And then I specialized into it. And every time when someone asked me if I also do web-based and mobile applications or Android applications, I always said, no, I'm just specialized in iOS. I know this technology best, and I can provide the best service for this technology.
Mm-hmm. And so you think that differentiated you from others? And
differentiated. I think it was luck, because I just put the bet on the right horse back then. So nobody expected this to grow this big. If you ask someone 2008 that mobile software will be the mobile first will be a thing, nobody would have thought about it. Everybody would have said, no, it's web, it's desktop software. But today, you cannot start a software project without a mobile component.
So, but if I'm thinking about your situation in 2008, 2009, so you have already some clients, you're doing some work at that. I think back then you were mostly focusing on .NET technologies. And then you're deciding that now you want to switch over to a new technology, to a new tech stack. Have you had a client already that, you know, you could, you know, use to learn that? Or was it really something that you did on the side and you were looking actively for clients that would need that development.
Yeah, it was not that smart because I did it out of interest. I was fascinated from this technology, and I was fascinated about the fact that you had a device in your pocket which has internet and was connected there. That was so new and so interesting. Well, not that new. There were devices before, and we also had the pleasure to work on some of these devices at university together, if you remember. But this device and this SDK changed so much, and I was so interested in this, and said, "What? This is so great! I want to learn it." So it was, most of it was fascination, and yeah, that my luck was that I was fascinated for the right thing, and then I was looking for clients. So I started learning it, and I wanted to get confidence in the technology. I did some side projects, some little apps. I took the remote course from the Stanford University. There was an open lecture about iOS development. I bought books and I taught myself this stuff. And then I went out looking for customers. And yeah, luckily there were not so many people who were specialized in this area, because here in Europe, the Mac was not really a thing back then. If you went to university, there were just a few Fruit logos lighting up, and an iPhone was also back then very expensive. So not that many people really went into this direction, I think. And so it was quite easy to find companies with the need for people who are interested in this stuff.
And so 2008 was also the time of the regression. Did you see an impact for your company at that time? Did you feel that there's a regression?
No, not at all. I think the regression or this year actually were the year when I started the new thing. So I was in this mode of learning the new stuff, starting this up. So I did not really care about this. Maybe I'm not sure, maybe that was also a reason for it, but I did not realize it this way. Maybe my website business did not work that well anymore because of the regression, and I had to start this this pivot, but I did not recognize it this way, so I don't really know.
Okay, and so when you're looking back over the time, did you always feel like the business is stable, or were there some, you know, dips where you thought, well, you know, I'm not sure if I will survive that here right now?
Yes and no. So sometimes you think, okay, is this something you can sustain for longer? How long will this work out? What if one of your big clients rejects you and, I don't know, gets their own developers in-house and replaces you with them? I had these thoughts from time to time, of course, but this feeling or these thoughts are especially bound to this wish for their own product, because I think that's the solution for this problem, to sustain a company as it is without having this agency business, which I would like to replace with the product, or with mm-hmm. a product, yeah, or with multiple mm-hmm. products. I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe.
But so, in fact, it were only thoughts and fears, but it never really yeah. turned out to be reality over yeah. your course of the company. That's really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so before you mentioned something, you said, well, sometimes you are at the client and the client doesn't want you to do unit tests, or you don't want you to do code reviews. Can you tell me a little bit more how you are embedded in the, you know, in the development processes of the client? Are you completely independent, and how can they, you know, how can they say, well, we don't want you to do unit tests?
That depends. Depends on the client. So our integration also depends on the client. Yeah. There are clients where we are deeply involved into the product development, even into the product design and product specification process. And customers which don't have any mobile developers and don't have any mobile experience, they might already have a system or a use case or a product which is not on mobile. And we are there to bootstrap the application and bootstrap also their team. While we start setting up the mobile applications, the client looks for their own developers. And then we try to integrate the developer into the development process and fade ourselves out. It depends on the demand from the customer. So that's one way how we work. And the other way, so this, and when we work this way, it's easy for us to bring our techniques to the floor, yeah? Because then we say it's necessary to do unit tests for this kind of logic. It's necessary to do code reviews. So we integrate our development flow, and we see these techniques as very important parts because we want to create the highest quality apps available out there. And there are other projects where the customer needs someone who codes their apps, and then they say, okay, we need, I don't know, feature X. That's how much we're willing to pay. Can you do it? And then, yeah, you have to make the decision. And if you mention unit tests, they often say no, they don't need it because it's not that important for them, or they don't want to have the costs. Most of the time, it's about the costs. So they want to get more development time to get more features and more out into the field than having time, I'm making air quotes now, wasted on unit tests or code reviews.
And so can you then, or do you want to convince them that unit tests are actually making sense or code reviews making sense, or are you just fine with it because in the end of the day, they have to deal with the software later?
Honestly, if we build the stuff in-house, we make code reviews as well. So we don't skip them. That's one thing we don't really skip. Unit tests, yeah, we decide which parts are very important to be unit tested and tested, and then we test them, and yeah, we don't spend too much time on it then. But most of the time, we still make every time. So I don't remember a lot of projects where we did not do code reviews. So it's different now because we are a team and we are more members. Back then when I was alone, it was hard because for code reviews, you needed someone else and yeah, nobody was there. So it was a different story.
Yeah, true. So now can you tell me a little bit about your team? How big is your team and how did that grow into that size? And what does it mean for you?
So we are four fixed employees, including me, in the company, and we have 5 to 6 freelancers, which we work constantly with. So they help us if we have higher demand for projects. And yeah, then we have this external team, I call it. These guys are sitting at our office sometimes, sometimes not. So we structured our company more like a remote company because one of our colleagues sits in Graz and he lives there. And we have a spot in a co-working space on a shared office there where he's located. So we are actually forced to, but we also want to be considered as a remote company. So like me right now, I'm sitting in my home office. I'm working from home a lot. And every other employee or every other member of our team they can work from where they want actually. If they want to stay in the office, we have an office here in Klagenfurt. They can work from there. Rafi almost all the time is there. And others like Klaus, he has 2 kids. He also likes to work from home or sometimes he has to do some stuff for and with his kids. Then we try to be as flexible as possible there. And we have a remote company structure, I would say. Yeah, so it's not necessary to be in the same place together all the time for us.
Mm-hmm. And so you told me before that you have these fears or had these fears of, you know, what happens if, you know, a company, you know, ditches you as their provider. How does that feel if you have like now 3 other people on your payroll and you're somehow responsible? And you also told me that some of the employees actually have kids. How does that feel for you? Is that okay now? Do you feel that the company is in a such a stable position that you're okay with that? Or do you still have some anxieties about that part?
I think a lot about it because most of my time is spent on these topics. So keeping the company alive, so to say. So having enough money in the bank to survive without customers for some time and to run a company that has quite low costs, I have to say. And that's something I'm really focusing on. So I'm not very well known for wasting money. I try to build an environment where my colleagues and myself like to work. I like to find clients and projects we all like to work on, and where we can learn something and bring our expertise into code or into products. And we like to see these products grow. And we are also getting a little bit attached to this product sometimes. It even hurts more when you get ditched in, but that does not happen very often. So, the team, of course, if we lose customers or the investment in our product is not working out, and I would be forced to let go one of my colleagues, it would be hard for me. But on the other hand, I know these are experts which are in high demand. So if someone of them really has to leave the company for whatever reason, I know they have a new job the week after, because they are very, very good developers and they are high in demand. So that makes it a little bit easier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So your company is actually located in Carinthia in Austria, which isn't the biggest tech scene in the world, I would say. Do you feel that that's sometimes a disadvantage, or where do you get your customers from? Are they all local companies, or are you now, you know, trying to get companies from larger cities around you? How does that work?
Local companies. We have some local clients, but we do in no way focus on the local environment here. We have good connections to Vienna and to Graz, which are way bigger cities than Klagenfurt, especially Vienna. Vienna is... there's a lot of startups, a lot of technology companies, and we also have clients in Germany, and we had some clients in the USA, but smaller projects and consulting gigs. But we focus on the German-speaking area, not necessarily because of the German language, but it's easier to find and to communicate with clients in Germany, in Switzerland, and in Austria, of course. And as far we had no problems to fill our books with projects in this area. And we are very well connected in the community. So we have our meetups, we have user groups and platforms where we share our demands and where we share when we have free resources. And yeah, there it's most of the time some recommendation you get. So it says, hey, I heard that this company has some free resources for iOS. I talk to them. And that actually is how it works most of the time.
So it's mostly word of mouth, would
yeah.
you say?
Yeah.
Okay. And so you said meetups. Is that, again, a local meetup, or are you also participating in Vienna meetups, in Graz meetups, or meetups in Germany? Are you going there and you know, network and connect with people, or is it something that's growing out of the meetups that happen actually in Klagenfurt, for example?
So right now we are mostly active in Klagenfurt because we started a meetup group here a few years ago, and we would like to meet every 2 months, but yeah, depends on who is willing to give a talk at our meetups. And we, with the company, we try to go to at least one conference a year together. This year, for example, we go to DEF1 in Linz, the conference from Dynatrace. Last year or the years before, we were in Berlin at the UIConf, which is the biggest European iOS and Mac iOS conference. And there you make a lot of connections to local and also to companies overseas, because there are a lot of American companies as well. And of course, in Vienna, back in the days, I attended a lot of these Cocoa Heads meetings, which is a special user group for iOS development. And every time when I'm in Vienna or in Graz and there were some of these meetups, I try to attend it to get into the network and to find friends and connections to projects as well.
And from your experience, was attending those conferences really a good strategy for getting clients, or is it more to, you know, grow your network and learn some new stuff?
I cannot really say that we found clients with these conferences. I think it's possible if you go there with the mindset of finding clients. That was not our intention for these conferences, or never is, actually. The intention is to look into the community, make friends, make connections, grow the network. And I think these effects of getting clients or gigs out of these conferences takes a few years or months. So later on, I don't know, 2 years later, someone reminds me, talking to me in at UiConf, I was talking about, let's say, a mobile subscription service, and he remembers me and says, there was this guy, I was talking to him at the conference, let's contact him. And maybe this way you find some clients, but it's not directly that you go there and say, hey, I'm here, I can work for you. And he says, yes, great, come and let's do it.
Yeah. So, Martin, one of the things that I want to know is, so you actually are, even though you worked at the company early on, right, even before you started studying, most of the time you have been self-employed and very often you worked alone. How did you keep up with technology? But more importantly, how did you learn best practices? How, you know, had you had some mentors that you could follow, or how did you learn about, you know, what development practices look like? What is an architecture, software architecture? How should that all work together? And what helped you there to grow?
No, I did not really have mentors. And on one hand, it was customer projects, of course. So where the customer brought some expertise with them, where I could learn something. And on the other hand, the most part was being interested in this stuff on myself. So besides university, of course, I really tried to learn a lot of about this stuff, to how to make good software. So I'm a technician at heart, even if I have to do a lot of business stuff at my job, but I'm a technician at heart, and I really like to deep dive into this stuff. And there also come these conferences into play, because conferences or the conferences I attended were all over these topics. So they were talking about architectures, best practices, new technologies, especially in the Apple world. Every year is this WWDC when Apple presents the new iOS and the new SDKs for developers. And this time is very exciting today still. So then I'm glued to my laptop, watching all the videos, looking into the new technologies, what's possible, what can we make out of it? Yeah. And that's how I stayed on top of these topics. And I really spent a lot of time into this process of learning and staying on top. But it felt quite easy because I really like new stuff. So I really like new stuff, and I like to try new stuff, and I like to experiment. So I think that helped in finding the motivation to learn and to stay on top of this.
So you said you are a technician by heart, and that even though you have to do a lot of other things, that's really what fascinates you. What about the leading of your employees? First of all, how would you describe your role? Would you say you are the boss of your employees? Are you the leader, the manager? How would you call yourself, or how do you see the relationship with your employees?
I would call myself the colleague which is legally responsible for the company. So we don't really have a strict hierarchy. We have very experienced developers. My colleagues have more experience in different parts than I have. So maybe I'm also the face of the company. Yes. So because I do the most of the client talking and business acquisition and invoicing and all the other stuff. But regarding the internal structure, we are all on the same level. Of course, at the end, if there is some decision to make, especially if it has some legal implications, it's on me. Especially because I'm responsible for it. But besides that, I think we have a very, very flat hierarchy, or actually no hierarchy, I would say. it doesn't really feel like it. I have to ask my colleagues if they feel differently. Now, as I said, we try to have a very friendly environment, and I think if the people have fun doing what they do, it's one of the most important things, because and then they do the best work and they like to work, and that's very important for me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the satisfaction and, you know, that they really enjoy and that they feel seen, you know, and also I think also empowered is very important for people to do their best work. So maybe, Martin, one of the things that I want to pick your brain on is, let's say you are, you know, you are a developer, maybe you're studying or you have already studied, you're in a job right now, and you're thinking about, you know, I would like to start my own dev shop. I would like to, you know, run a successful dev shop as well, also get independence. And, you know, what would be your advice for a person like that? What would you say, this is how I would do it if I would start all over?
I would say go for it. find someone you like to work with, or you know who is doing this already, especially at some of these meetups or at the co-working space. Look into the network and see what's there. Make some connections there, and I think then you can pick it up from there, because right now, especially in the development scene, there is a high demand for good people, for people who can create software on their own. And starting over is quite easy, especially here in Austria. So you can start a company quite quickly, and it might be a good advice to have at least one project in your pocket before you quit your other job, if it's possible. But yeah, there are several freelancers who started their business, which came talking to me, for example, before that, and asking these questions, similar like you do it today. So how did you start? What should I do? What do I think? Should I do this? So find someone like this and talk to them. And if someone comes talking to me, most of the time I can offer them a project or point them to someone and say, hey, ask them, because I think they might need something. And yeah, then you can get started. And if you start in a way being curious and not having the big money in mind and trying to get it off the ground, I think it's quite easy to get into it. Especially in software development. So I just can speak for that.
So do you think that iOS would be still something people should, you know, pick up? Or is there some other technology that you think, well, if I would make the choice to specialize now, that would be the tech stack that I would provide?
That's something I'm thinking a lot about lately, because I have the feeling that there's still a lot of demand, so don't take this wrong. And there's a lot of demand for native development, but of course, with all the hybrid technologies out there, getting more apps to more platforms in less time is something customers ask for, of course, because they have to. It's way less effort, and I think there is a point, or there will be a point when this will turn around, so that these hybrid technologies might be good enough for most applications. From my point of view, they are not right now, not for the projects we do. There are very perfect use cases for these technologies. So, but if you specialize in one of these technologies, you will not come by learning the details of the platform. So that's why I always like to point people into this native direction, because even if you do something like React Native or Xamarin, for example, to make a really good native app for iOS or for Android, you have to understand the platform. You have to understand the constraints of the platform, and you have to understand the idea of the platform. So there are different ideas and there are different levels of integration. And the deeper the integration of your use case into the platform is, the more low level or the more native you have to go. And if you want to do a really great app, I think it's still necessary to respect the platform. And I think these hybrid technologies lack a little bit of this detail, of course, because they have to do abstractions on top of several platforms. So yes and no, looking into these hybrid technologies is a good idea, I think, because they are in high demand. But also on the other hand, knowing the game on a native level is important to be better in the hybrid ones, and having this technology or this technology stack in your pocket, yeah, I don't think it will hurt. But it's a lot of work to learn it, actually, especially if you do not just one platform, if you want to do several platforms, because they are quite different.
So one of the things that is quite hyping right now is no-code solutions. But I see that more on the desktop, on the web, but less on, you know, the devices like Android or iOS or something like that. What do you think about that? Do you think that this is, first of all, this is something that will stay and will get better? And do you think it will reach the mobile devices as well very soon?
Yes and no. So we talk about these no-code environments, I think, for more than 20 years. We heard this at the university already, and we learned about it. And from my feeling, it depends on the use case. On the mobile platform, there are a lot of these tools in use for prototyping. So it's another level, so it's not a real no-code platform. But for prototyping with our designer, we use tools like these, so you can create a prototype of an app which is interactive, which has animations, where the interaction feels good, and you can do design and product reviews based on these platforms. And you could even use these prototypes then to create assets, or there are tools where you can extract animations and other stuff to reuse them in the application as parts.
What kind of tools would you use there? What would you recommend to look into?
Recommend our designer uses Sketch a lot, which I think most of the mobile designers these days, or web designers these days, do. And there are tools like Principle, and there is Origami from Facebook. So these are prototyping tools, and they are very graphical. They are focused on animations, on graphics, on UI and UX. And there you can link screens, activate buttons, and do animations. And then you can deploy them on an actual device and give them to a customer for review. So these are the tools we use. But there are a lot going on in this area. It feels like every 3 months there is a new design prototyping tool coming out right now. There's a lot going on. But as far as I know, these tools are quite similar. And none of these tools really gives you the ability to design and prototype your app and then export the final version of the app, because especially business logic and communication with backend systems.
So what I had in mind was more, I think the tools that I had in mind right now, with, for example, Zapier and those, they are more focused on the backend, right? So it's not really, so one of the things that they are really lacking is the nice front end. And, you know, they are feeling if you're using some of those tools and then you're chaining them together, it feels like there's a lot of friction and things like that. So it's, I would say, even the complete opposite. It's like, for example, Airtable, it's like having a database and then you have some interface obviously to it, but it's not the interface that you're really designing. So it's coming from the other direction, I would say. So I'm not an mobile device expert. I haven't seen something like that really for the mobile device. Do you think that something like that will come, and maybe those two, you know, those two areas will somehow marry at one point, that we have the nice UI and the back end, and somehow it just plugs in and it's like Lego that you use?
I don't see it, because if you look into the design process and into the iterations that go into a mobile app, which is a very long, a very detailed process, I don't see a tool that is capable to produce this flexibility right now. But yeah, I've been proven wrong a lot. I don't know. And for backend technologies, of course, there are the tools we also use them for. On the mobile clients, we used a lot of GraphQL, our latest projects, which is really nice because you don't have to write any of this repetitive API code, and everything is nicely structured and nicely typed, and it just works out. At least that's the advertisement. So we have good experience with this kind of technologies, and they help a lot. But yeah, that's just one small part. Most work we really do is user interfaces. User interfaces, interactions, UX design, that's the most time we spend on, especially on these small screens. You have to really nail it to have a good app. If you are in the B2C business, so, and that's, I think, where this might be different in B2B applications. If you have a B2B use case in a big company, you, I don't know, have a production line and you need a mobile app which provides a very simple user interface for a very simple use case, I see technologies like this could help creating stuff like this. But we don't really have a lot of experience in this kind of area.
Yeah, I think especially prototyping, but prototyping ideas now, I think that no-code solutions can be very beneficial there, just to see, you know, yeah, how would it look like, you know, would it actually work? Are people interested in general about this idea? But then at the end of the day, to really get a big adoption of users and get them excited, it's really important where a button is and if it's, you know, how the user interface, how smooth it is and how intuitive it is. Because I think people just get annoyed with tools that are not working as expected. So yeah, I can see that.
That's the area we really spend most of the time for B2C applications.
People are really feeling this app gets the job done and in a very nice and smooth way.
Yes, because if you don't provide a nice looking and nice feeling app, it depends on the use case, of course, but nowadays you have so many apps in the App Store, and most likely the same use case you fulfill is already fulfilled by someone else or will be fulfilled by someone else soon. So yeah, if you want to get traction, it's not so easy anymore to just write an app, put it into the App Store. If you do that and don't spend a lot of time then on marketing and making the app visible and having a good designed app and a good designed user experience, if your use case is not one of a kind, it's very hard to make a living out of apps then actually.
So maybe to wrap our conversation up, I would like to know, can you mention some of the apps that you actually developed so that we get an idea of what you're doing? Or is that all confidential and you're not allowed to talk about it?
Actually, I don't really know if I'm allowed to talk about it. I don't know if my customers want that others know that we did it, but... I think
you are the legal person here, right?
Yeah, I know. I think it's no problem. We have customers we worked a lot with, and one customer I know, it was always something that we can brag that we did work for them because it's good for them if someone talks about them. So we were deeply involved into the development of iTranslate a late version of iTranslate, I have to say. So yeah, we worked a few years on and helped their team. So they also had an internal team. And for a long time, we are working for the company Meister Labs, which provides productivity tools. And they have two tools. One is called MindMeister. That's the mobile apps we are working on. And the other tool is Meister Task. And there is a colleague of mine, so another freelancer working on, but they also have internal teams. So we are part of their team. So these are very big and successful apps, I would say, because I think iTranslate is one of the most downloaded translation apps on iOS and Android. And MindMeister is also not that small. They have a lot of users. And this is a SaaS product, so you can use this tool on the web as well. And the iOS client and the Android client also has code inside which I touched or we touched.
So maybe my last question related to that would be, how many concurrent clients do you need to sustain a team of four plus some of the freelancers?
I need one.
A high-paying one.
Yeah, well, you don't want to have just one, but if you have one that's paying all the hours you produce, you can survive. It's not very wise to just have one because then you have...
This was more a question from experience. So, you know, on average, you know, how many clients do you need to, you know, first of all, maybe get yourself off the ground and then have a team of four?
I would advise in the beginning that you just have one and look into it and check it out. As a single person, I think you cannot handle more than two or three projects in parallel. Three is very, very demanding and very hard. You have to work a lot of hours, as I did, to manage this. And if you have a team like we have it right now, it's okay to have three to four projects going on, but that's a lot already. So I'm feeling more confident with two. And the project or the product we do, of course, is also in there. So it's additional. If you have more than that, which happens sometimes. So we have more customers, but as a project you're actively working on. So not every customer needs something at the same time or all the time. Yeah. But it gets very busy before updates of the SDKs, new iOS and Android versions coming out before Christmas. There is a lot of work. So everyone wants something before Christmas because they want to have their apps updated in the store before Christmas. And we have customers we are constantly working with, and these constant customers, I'd say, for a small company like us, three to four projects is enough. Because if I would like to add additional projects, I would need more resources, especially on the project management level, because right now we don't have a dedicated project manager and we don't need one, but if we would like to do more concurrent projects, I think we would need something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it has probably also to do with the focus. If you have just one thing that are two customers that you can get really involved and very focused on that one. If you have, let's say, six ones, you are juggling so many balls that I think there's so much overhead that you actually have to
account. It's not even possible. If you put six projects on one person, what would you do? You can work. You need some blocks of work. You cannot do just 1 hour in the morning there and 1 hour in the afternoon. So actually what you want to have is, if it's possible to have one project per day, that would be good. If you do one project per day and you do five projects per week, every customer has to wait 1 week for you until you deliver something or be available again. And if you're in a continuous development process where the customer develops something constantly, that's not possible. So that's actually a big problem of freelancing. We had a problem on one of our projects with other freelancers. There was the case that these freelancers just had time on 2 days, so Monday and Thursday, and then they were away for the rest of the week. And if you waited for something to be done and it got not ready in these 2 days, you had to wait for 1 week. And sometimes this was a real problem because the customer wanted to move on and then someone else has to pick it up, and that's not so easy all the time. So even for single freelancers, I think one client in the beginning is perfect, and then slowly moving on. And yeah, two clients, I think, is very good balance, but also has some risk. But at least you need two, because if one project is over, then you don't really have any income anymore. So that's the problem with selling your time for money. And the income is gone. And if you really need 3 months to find a new customer, it could get
hairy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, problematic. Okay. Well, Martin, thank you so much for talking with me. I heard your baby in the background, so yeah, I think maybe it's time for you to move on to do something more important. So where can we find you? Probably we can find you through your website of your company, topmind.eu.
Yes, that's okay. The company website, which is very outdated, but if you have client projects, you don't have time for your own stuff. And yeah, you can also find me on Twitter at mgrazer. Maybe
I will link that.
Yeah, it's better.
like I always link mine as well. Yeah.
It's the same. And yeah, that's where you can find me. If someone wants
very
to
cool.
contact me,
maybe you wanted Twitter, to also mention the open table, the open tech table, right, in Klagenfurt, because you're an organizer of that as well, like co-organizer,
yes,
I guess.
There
right?
is this local tech group called Open Tech Table, which is about programming and technology. And we try to meet every 2 months. And there is this website, opentechtable.com. And there you can subscribe to our newsletter where we announce the next meetings. We also have a Slack channel where you can join and get in contact with the community, talk to our people there. And yeah, we also discuss the next meetups. And we are always happy to have people who are willing to tell us something about the technology, programming, what they are doing, projects they do. So if some of your listeners is in our area and interested in giving a talk, we are very happy to invite them to our meetup.
Yeah, very good. Okay, so thank you, Martin, for being on my show. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, if you enjoy my show, it would mean the world to me if you become a patron. You can find all information on se-unlocked.com/patron. I have some exclusive perks for you. Another awesome way to support the show is by helping me spread the word. You can send the episode to a friend or share it on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Well, thank you so much for listening to the Software Engineering Unlocked podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye.